This is HPR episode 2811 entitled, Interview with Alan Pope. It is hosted by Anik, and is about 90 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, in this episode, Anik talks with Alan Pope about SAPs, SAPcraft and all things related.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and in this episode, I'm going to talk with Alan Pope from Canonical about Snap, SnapCraft, and everything related. Let's go! A few years ago, when you wanted to build a package on your Linux distribution, you had to go grab the sources and the nightmare began. But nowadays, this is over. You have deb files, you have snap files, you have flatpaks and other packages, universal packages. So to talk about one of them in particular, the snaps and everything that is around the snaps, I have with me Alan Pope from Canonical. Good evening, Alan.
Hello, Yannick. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well.
So, Alan, for the two or three people in the dark corners of the internet that don't know you yet, would you mind going doing a small introduction?
Sure. I'm Alan Pope. I am often known as Popey online, and I've worked for Canonical for 7 or so years, maybe 8 years now. And I've worked on various projects, including Ubuntu Desktop, and I've worked in the Ubuntu community. And more recently, my role has changed to become a developer advocate for Snaps and SnapCraft.
Nice. You're also a host of the Ubuntu podcast.
I started the Ubuntu podcast with some friends 11 years ago now. And we initially started just doing a few episodes, not sure how long it would last. And someone wrote in and mentioned that our season numbers were prefixed with a zero, like season 01. And the person who wrote in thought that was extremely arrogant of us thinking that we would ever get to 10 seasons. And we've got to the 12th season starts this year. So it's far more episodes than we ever thought we'd make. But it's enjoyable. It's good fun. It's a few people sitting down. We talk about Ubuntu, obviously, because it's Ubuntu podcast. But we also talk about general Linux things and other tech things and what we've been up to. It's good fun.
Yeah. Nice podcast. And
thank you.
Really enjoyed that. So let's talk about the subject, today's subject, snaps, SnapCraft, and everything around that. Let's start with, what are snaps? Aren't they like zip file on steroids?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you could think of them just as software packages, really. Much like on a Android phone, you have APKs that contain your software and you grab that from a store. It's very, very similar. It's a software store for the Linux market. So it's not specific to desktop. There are server packages in that store. There are packages for Raspberry Pis, and there are big desktop applications in there as well. So you can think of it as an app store for Linux, very much like Google Play Store or Windows Store or any store you get on any other platform, really.
Yeah. What pushed Canonical to make snaps? I mean, there was already other packages, obviously deb files. Why make snaps?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's an evolution of work we did on Ubuntu Phone. So we worked on a mobile platform, which it's commonly referred to as Ubuntu Touch. And we figured out that it doesn't really work to have the traditional packaging systems like Debs on a phone don't work particularly well, especially when you've got a device that's very constrained in terms of resources like disk space and amount of memory and the CPU. They're very much limited compared to a desktop machine, a modern desktop machine. And there's also the problems that the power often just gets turned off and the network is unreliable, you know, when the battery dies. So when we were looking into really kicking off the phone project way back in 2011, 2012, we looked at the various ways we could deliver software, and we decided not to use Debs for applications, the applications that developers would create. And instead we created something called Click Packages. And Click Packages were our way of delivering software to Ubuntu Phone, so that it would work reliably and atomically when delivered over a dodgy network connection where there's limited power and limited resources, and you could roll them back if they went wrong, and so on and so on. And we learned a lot from doing that, and the phone project got shut down in 2017, but we learned a lot from it in terms of how software could be delivered and how it could be made easier for users to discover it, because the phone had a built-in app store, the Ubuntu One store, where you could discover new applications and developers could publish their applications as these click packages. And it made it a lot easier for people to find software on their mobile device, on their Ubuntu Touch device. And so we wanted to bring what we'd learned there to the desktop and server and IoT. And snaps are a kind of evolution of click packages. They're a similar kind of thing. They're atomic packages. They have some of the same attributes as click packages. So there's this lineage of, you know, we worked on Debs back in the day, then we moved on to clicks for the phone, and now we've moved on to snaps. So that's kind of the history of where snaps came from, really.
It's a natural evolution then.
Right, exactly. And it's, you know, often people wonder, you know, why we did it. What was the point of this? Why are you reinventing the wheel? And there's some solid reasons why. And you know, the one of them is that discovery. It's very difficult for developers to get their software in front of users, especially with traditional Linux desktops, where software is packaged as RPMs and Debs. Packaging software in that way is not straightforward, even for an experienced developer. And for a developer who's not wanting to really get engaged in the minutiae of detail of how a Linux distribution is built, they just want to deliver their application to those users. They don't really particularly care about all the processes and all the rules about how the distribution is made. They just want their software in front of users. And from a user perspective, the user just wants new software and they want to find that new and interesting software. And we found making Debs and having Debs be the foundation of the app store was really limiting for both of those problems. And so snaps solve the problem from both sides. They make it easier for developers to create the package in the first place, and they make it easier for users to find the packages.
Okay, so talking about developers building their packages, how can one build a snap of their own app? Is it really different from building a Deb, or is there any tools available for that?
Yeah, so we created a tool called Snapcraft. But if we take a step back and think about what a snap actually is, it's an atomic compressed file. You said it's like a zip file on steroids. It kind of is, really. Technically, all a snap package is a bunch of files compressed as a SquashFS file with a tiny bit of metadata in there. And that's it. And you could actually create a snap package by just dumping a bunch of files in a directory, put the metadata file in there, and then compress it with mksquashfs. That's all you need in order to make a snap. So if you're, you know, that kind of person and technically competent, you could make a snap with mksquashfs and not need any other software. But typically developers don't want to do that, you know, hardcore ones and zeros way of making packages. They want tools that will do it for them. And so we created a tool called Snapcraft. And Snapcraft is written in Python, and it understands how to build software. It has a system of plugins, so it knows if your project is built using CMake, it knows how to build a CMake project. And if your project is built with Rust, then, or written in Rust, then Snapcraft knows how to use Cargo and the other tools that are around Rust. And the idea of that is Snapcraft can compile your software into a snap more easily than you could develop the Debian packaging or the RPM spec file or whatever it is you need for these other packaging formats. The idea is to make it easier. And we provide a bunch of documentations and tutorials and videos that, you know, let people know how to package their software. And you don't actually have, I've mentioned like building from source, you know, CMake and Rust and Cargo and all that kind of stuff. But Snapcraft is actually more flexible than that, in that you can take a pre-built binary and just jam it into a snap. And Snapcraft has a plugin called Dump. And with the plugin Dump, you can just point Snapcraft at your already built application, which could even be a deb, in fact, and just ingest that file that you are already creating and drop it into the snap, and that will work. So we try and make it as easy as possible. Software packaging is hard. It's not straightforward, but we've tried to make it as easy as possible. And we're always looking for developers who want to get their software out there to try using Snapcraft, and let us know if you get stuck. We have a forum where people can ask questions, and you know, if there are bugs in the process, you know, we want to fix them.
Okay. You said that Snapcraft knows how to build the standard languages and stuff like that. But if I have my own very, very carefully crafted build script, can I still use Snapcraft to build my app?
Yeah, totally. There's a concept in the Snapcraft. Snapcraft is driven with a YAML file. And the YAML file has a few sections. There's a bit of metadata at the top, which describes your application, like the name, version, summary, and description. And then the bits that make up your software, all the component parts, are called parts. And you list those out and specify which plugin you're going to use, whether it's CMake or Rust or whatever. But what you can also do within those parts is override the defaults. So, for example, with auto tools, the typical configure, make install, you might have extra steps you need to do in between those that, you know, is part of your build process. And Snapcraft doesn't know what they are. So you can do what's called an override build, where you explicitly specify the bits where you're deviating from what would be the standard way to build software. And so, yeah, you can override it. You can do it all completely manually if you want to. You could just basically insert the lines of your build script directly into the Snapcraft YAML and have it build via whatever method you choose. You don't have to use the pre-built plugins. They're just there as a convenience, really.
So powerful and flexible.
That's the goal, yeah.
You mentioned that it's a snap is actually a squashfs file system. So that means if I have dependencies and I need that library and that config file and etc., it's all in the snap.
To a large degree, yeah. There are some exceptions to that. So, for example, if you've got an application that depends on a very specific version of Python, the goal of snaps is that they can run on any Linux distribution. And as a developer, you have no idea what version of Python exists on the end user customer systems. And so you bundle whatever version of Python you know your application works with inside the snap. And whatever other libraries that you need, you bundle those inside this compressed file. And then you've got the same snap will work on lots of different Linux distributions, and you don't have to worry about the underlying libraries that may or may not be present. Because while one person has a traditional Linux desktop system like Ubuntu or Fedora that has a lot of these things pre-installed, someone else might have a super minimal Linux distribution that doesn't have the things that you're expecting. And so you bundle those into the snap, and then you guarantee that the way it works on your machine is the way it will work on another machine. And if it doesn't work the same on every machine, then that's a bug in probably Snapcraft or SnapD or one of the components that we look after, and we need to fix that.
All right. So if it's not working, it's your fault, basically. That's what you're
well,
saying.
A developer somewhere. Yeah, somewhere.
All right. Isn't there a risk here to see, like, I installed five snaps and five of them bundle Python, and then I end up with five times the same version of Python?
That's possible. It's certainly possible that there might be components in your snap that are the same as components in another snap, but you don't necessarily talk to that other developer. And so they might one day decide to move to a newer version of Python, but you don't want to. And so each snap has its own independent version of Python. I'm just using Python as an example, but it could be something as simple as libpng or libjpg. You know, it could be anything. And so you're not tied to what the distribution ships, and you're not tied to moving forward just because another package has moved forward. And so, yes, there may be some duplication on disk, and that's mitigated slightly by the fact that these are compressed. They don't actually get uncompressed on your system. So when you install a snap, it stays compressed all the time. And at the point when you run the application, it's reading the uncompressed files dynamically while it's loading. There are a couple of other things we can do to mitigate that. We have a concept of what are called content snaps. And a content snap is a snap that might contain a lot of very common things. And I'll give you two examples of a content snap and why that might be useful. Let's say you're a GTK developer and you're creating an awesome new GNOME application. Chances are you're using a whole load of GTK and GNOME libraries that every other GTK application uses. And so there is a GNOME platform snap, which you can depend on, or you can reuse rather. And so when your application is built, you don't need to bundle those libraries in your snap because they're already in the GNOME platform snap. And similarly, there's a KDE frameworks snap, which contains the typical KDE libraries. So if you're building a Qt application that's using common KDE libraries, then there's no point in you bundling them because you can just reuse this KDE frameworks content snap. And there are a whole bunch of GNOME snaps, and there are a whole bunch of KDE snaps, and they reuse these platform snaps so that you don't have that duplication. But if you did need to go off-piste and your application is using brand new bleeding edge versions of GTK libraries or some part of the GNOME stack that you need that's newer than is in the platform snap, then sure, you bundle it in and it will override whatever's in these content snaps.
So it's a trade-off between making sure that there's exactly what I need on my system and the size of the snap, actually. So
yeah, and we're certainly conscious of the fact that snaps can contain, you know, duplication across multiple snaps, and that can be a problem for some people who, you know, don't like the idea that you've got multiple copies of Python. But equally, from a developer's perspective, they want to know that this application is going to work. And when they tested it, it worked with the version of Python they were using. And there's an additional support burden that they have to deal with when a user on some random distro somewhere says, hey, it doesn't work here because I've got Python XYZ, or I've got my own home-built version of Python and it doesn't work. And, you know, developers got to figure out some way of supporting that or not. And with a snap, they don't have to worry about it because it's the same package on every distro.
Yeah, yeah. I think that this the advantage is a lot bigger than the inconvenience of having multiple copies. But that's my own point of view.
Right.
I believe that snaps, when they run in the strict mode, I think are sandboxed. So what does that mean exactly? Can snaps do whatever they want on the system, or
That's a good question. So this is one of the things that snaps introduce that the other traditional packaging systems don't have, is a concept of confinement. So for example, if you've got an application that does some kind of address book, and you've got another application that is like a photo booth application, you don't want the photo booth application going and scrubbing around, finding your address book, and then uploading it to the internet. And equally, you don't want your address book application randomly turning on your webcam and being able to take photos. So with Snaps, we have some control over the access to the system that they have. And each Snap can have a different profile of what they can see. So there's the strictly confined Snap by default has access to very little, and it has a kind of fake view of the world. When the application starts up, it can see a root file system, and it can see some readable areas, some writable areas, and it can see all its binaries and all its libraries, and it can run. But if it tries to connect to the network, it will fail by default. And if it tries to play a sound, it will fail because it won't be able to connect to the audio subsystem, and it won't be able to open the camera, and so on and so on. And on a Raspberry Pi, it wouldn't be able to connect to the GPIO pins and so on. And the goal of this is to have, you know, limits to what an application can do, so that it can't reach outside what would be normally expected for that application to do. And so with strict confinement, we build on top of that view of the world with what are called interfaces. And these interfaces grant access, broad access to particular parts of the system. So it might give access to the network, or it might give access to the camera, or to the pulse audio, or to the GPIO pins, or whatever it might be. And this list of interfaces is growing over time as we discover more applications that need access to strange and esoteric parts of the system. We create interfaces for them, and those interfaces will then be specified by the developer, and the user can see which interfaces each application is connected to, and can optionally disconnect them or connect them if they're not automatically connected. So it gives the developer the capability to list the resources that it would be reasonably expected for that application to use, and it gives the user visibility of what they can expect that application will want to be able to do.
Okay, I have now a personal question. Well, personal, I'm very interested in. Is the connector with ALZA actually working now? Because I was building an app last year, and I had a lot of trouble connecting to ALZA.
So there are some, should we kindly call them legacy technologies in Linux, which are a little bit more difficult to confine. And this is a problem with many old, in inverted commas, applications, pre-existing applications. Like any binary, if you imagine yourself as a Linux binary somewhere on the file system, you have some expectations of where you can read and write and the devices you can talk to. And those expectations are broken slightly by strict confinement, because an application will just expect to be able to write to a particular place or connect to a particular device. And if it can't do that, then the program may crash, or it may not operate correctly. And so it can be troublesome when we've got applications that use some of these older technologies where they don't behave particularly well when they're told, no, you can't access all ALZA devices. We do have workarounds for that. ALZA is a particularly gnarly one. Dan Llewellyn, a member of the Snapcraft community, came up with some reusable parts that you could just paste into your Snapcraft YAML that will give it access to ALZA. Unfortunately, ALZA has a bunch of hard-coded paths in it, so you have to kind of build parts of ALZA yourself. But it's really copy and pasteable.
Okay, I'm going to give it another try then.
Cool.
My next question is now obsolete. We are on the 29th of March, 2019. Oh, crikey. And yesterday evening, the Twitter and the whole internet went crazy when the Snapcraft team announced that the problems, the startup problems of Snap have been resolved. Is that correct?
Yeah, I saw that blog post as well. That blog post was written by a colleague of mine, Igor. And so some back history. Snaps have, over the last year or so, had a reputation among some people that they are, in inverted commas, slow to start, right? And it turns out, in certain circumstances, some applications, when snapped, might be slower to start up than if they've been traditionally packaged. And the developers spent a lot of time looking into this and trying to figure out exactly what it was. And some of the problems were particularly obtuse to do with font caching and date stamps and the way that one date stamp is of 1 second granularity and another date stamp is nanosecond granularity and how they don't match. And that causes fonts to be rebuilt, font caches to be rebuilt. Those kind of things can slow down application startup. And I think we've nailed those issues. There may be other issues as well. The goal of Snaps isn't that the application should be slow and you should just suck it up, right? If there is a problem, if it is slow, we want to know why. And we've started building additional tracing tools into Snap itself, Snapd itself, so that we can debug these kind of things. So for example, if you type snap run VLC, for example, if you've got the VLC snap installed, then that would just run the VLC snap. But there's an additional parameter called trace exec. And if you do snap run VLC dash dash trace hyphen exec, it will run the snap. But then afterwards, it will print out a list of the top 10 syscalls that were made during that application starting up. And so you can learn to identify what the bottlenecks were that were causing the application to start slowly. So it's not that snaps are slow to start. It's that in some circumstances, some applications might be slow and we need to identify why and fix it. And we fixed at least a couple of those issues. And, you know, we're very mindful of this because we hear this all the time and we want to fix it. You know, so if any listeners are encountering issues where a particular application is slow, come and join us on the forum. You know, let us know which application it is, what environment you're running on, and we'll try and reproduce it. We have tons of VMs of every single Linux distribution, and we enjoy investigating these things. And we will dedicate developer time to identifying these things because it shouldn't be the case. It should just start in the same way as it does in traditional packaging. So if it doesn't, it's a bug, and we need to fix it.
And developers themselves can use this option. I mean, it's
sure.
Yeah, it should be fixed if possible by the maintainer of the project.
Well, I mean, if it's our fault, you know, if it's something that Snapd is doing or something that and we need to do the investigation either way, right? And that's on us. You know, if the developer has coded in a loop that sits there and spins for 10 seconds, then there's not a lot we could do about that. But, you know, if it's on us, then sure, we want to look into it and we want to fix it.
Okay.
We totally do.
So if I find that my snaps is slow to start, I just do the tracing and send that to you and then you can
not
help.
Me directly.
No, yeah.
that doesn't scale. But yeah, on the forum. Yeah, just go to forum.snapcraft.io and the developers are very friendly and you know, especially if we get multiple corroborated reports of like, you know, multiple people running the same application in different places and being able to show, look, it starts in this amount of time here and it takes longer there and it's noticeable, then sure, we're gonna look into it.
Okay, so create 15 email addresses and post multiple times. So back to the fact that snaps are SquashFS file systems. When a snap is installed or mounted, I don't know how you actually name that, there's a lot of mount points on the system. Does that use resources? I mean, if I have like, I don't know, 65,000 snaps, will I run out of file descriptors?
If you've got 65,000 snaps, that's a lot of snaps installed at once. But seriously, I don't know of any additional resource that's taking up having an extra mount point. These are standard kernel features, having additional mount points on a system. It's entirely possible. I personally haven't benchmarked having, you know, one snap versus 10 snaps versus 100 snaps. My system, I actually do have about 250 snaps installed on my system. So, you know, I am the worst case scenario. And when these things go wrong, I am the first one to complain. I probably have more snaps installed than anyone else on the planet. So I am patient zero when these things occur. And I do report these kind of issues, but I'm happy to hear from anyone who has a notable performance problem as a result. I started a thread recently on the forum because I noticed that boot time was possibly affected, and the developers are on that and they're looking into it right now. But like I say, I'm an outlier with 250 odd snaps installed on my system, which is a little bit, you know, a little bit over the top. I know some people don't like the fact that because they're mounted SquashFS files, the output from some terminal commands can be a bit cluttered, like df, for example. If you know, people commonly type df to see how much space they've got on their root partition or their home partition, and then that's all clouded out by all these snaps that go scrolling by, and that can be frustrating. So one tip I would give you is what I have is in my bash rc an alias for df that uses df dash dash exclude, and you can do exclude equals SquashFS. And by doing that, every time I df, it only shows me everything that's not a SquashFS file, which is basically every other partition, which I do on all my systems. And I'm lobbying the Ubuntu desktop team to make that the default in Ubuntu so that everyone gets that. But that's, you know, one line to add to your bash RC to make that problem go away.
So there you go. Tip and tricks of the episode.
Absolutely.
If I was to start building an app for Ubuntu today, should I even bother about dev files?
It depends. It depends what type of application it is, really. If it's open source and it's a library of some kind, maybe it's not a full what we call leaf application. If it's a library of some kind that might be useful in lots of different Linux distributions, then maybe that makes sense to package it as a deb and get it into Debian, not directly into Ubuntu, but get it into Debian. Then all of the many derivatives of Debian and Debian itself will benefit. So I still think there's value in creating debs for system level components and system libraries and utilities that would be beneficial to the wider Linux ecosystem. But I think there's certainly a space for snaps which allow a developer to very quickly iterate. If you're moving fast on an application and you're iterating really quickly and you're doing releases every couple of weeks or every couple of months, then maybe a deb is not the right idea, because once you get it into Debian or even into Ubuntu, and that release of Debian goes out, or that release of Ubuntu goes out, it's kind of frozen. You can push updates and bug fixes, but the whole process for getting debs into Debian and Ubuntu and other distributions, it can slow you down as a developer. And one of the things we want with snaps is to speed developers up, so they know that if they've got a new release, they can just push it to the snap store and everyone gets the update because they auto refresh. Whereas that we found in the past, getting developers to create devs, A, is hard, but B, is it's slow. The whole process of getting your application into the Debian archives is slow because it's dependent upon Debian developers and maintainers and archive administrators. You've got all these people in the way between you and users. Whereas with snaps, you push it to the store, it's immediately available for users to install. There's nobody in the way saying, "Ah, well, we've got a release coming. You can't put it in that release of Ubuntu or that release of Debian. You've got to wait for the next one," which is what used to happen. With snaps, you're in control as the developer. You push it to the store. If you want to push an update, you push an update. There's no maintainer sitting in between you and your users.
Talking about the store, the store is open. I mean, I can push my own snap on the store, as you said earlier. But mm-hmm. what stops me from publishing a snap of, let's say, GIMP or OpenShot, and pretend I'm the maintainer of that snap?
That's a good question. So we anticipated this when the store was first set up, and we pre-registered the name of every application that's in the Ubuntu archive. And we also pre-registered a whole bunch of other popular open source and non-open source applications to prevent this or reduce the chance of this happening, so that you're less likely to get someone saying, hey, I am the GIMP developer, and here is my copy of the GIMP, and it's, you know, got malware in it, or it's just buggy, and, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to have malware. It could just be that it's not updated very often, and then users install it thinking it's official, and they get frustrated because it doesn't get updated, or it's buggy, or, you know, it doesn't look right. So we pre-registered them, and if a developer who is a legitimate, like, GIMP developer in this particular example, or whatever, tries to register the application name in the store will tell you that's already registered, meaning we pre-registered it, or it could be somebody else already has it, and then offers for you to go through a process to request a discussion with a store admin. And so at that point, you can say, no, I'm the GIMP developer. I would like that name. And you can put a comment in there and put some text in there that corroborates your story. Maybe your email comes from the domain, you know, gimp.org or whatever, but provide additional evidence that says you are the rightful owner of that application name. And then the store admins, and that includes my team, we'll read those and arbitrate that, and maybe we'll contact the other person who has that name, or if it's just one we've pre-registered, we release it and you have it. So we've tried to make sure that that doesn't happen so often. It still can happen because we haven't registered every possible application name in the world, or we haven't pre-registered them. So it can still happen and has happened, and we do arbitrate, and, you know, we get on phone calls with developers and try to mediate between them and decide who's the right person to own that application name. Because what we want is for users to have confidence that when they go to the store and they see GIMP or Bitcoin or whatever it is, that they know that that's coming from where they expect it to come from, just the same as any other store. You know, if you go to Android Play Store, and there's an application in there, like a VPN client, for example, you want to be sure that that VPN client came from the vendor of that VPN and not from some random dude on the internet, right?
Yeah, and especially for a VPN.
Exactly. And so there are certain classes of application that we're very keen to make sure that the right person has access to it. But equally, we also have to be mindful that many of these applications are open source and have wide and diverse communities. And it's not always the lead developer or the maintainer of the application who, in inverted commas, owns the application in the store. And so maybe it's an enthusiastic community person who their contribution to that application is to package it up as a snap and put it in the store. And that's perfectly valid as well. And so we have to balance the, you know, does someone have this under the right name, along with making sure it's possible for open source software developers to claim a name, even if they aren't the central core responsible person you would expect for that application.
That sounds like it's a lot of work.
Actually, it doesn't amount to a huge amount of work right now. We've got a fair sized team of people who are able to reply to those requests, and we don't get a huge number of them, to be honest. The other thing that we have in the store is a concept of verified developers. So you'll notice some of the applications in the store have a little tick, much like a Twitter verified emblem, just to give the user a little more confidence that the VLC snap does indeed come from the VLC developers, and the Skype snap definitely does come from Microsoft, and all these JetBrains snaps actually come from JetBrains themselves. And so all of these little things we do are all to try and ensure that developers have control of their own software and users have the confidence that that software came from where it says it came from.
Just for my information, you said you pre-registered non-open source apps. Can I publish a Photoshop snap?
You could try. See what happens.
Yeah. Snaps exist in multiple Linux distributions, not only Debian derivatives, Red Hat, and probably many other that I don't know of. Does that really mean that I can build once and it runs everywhere? I mean, would it run exactly the same way on Ubuntu and Fedora?
That's the goal. So what we're aiming for is that you as a developer don't have to worry about all the different Linux distributions. You as the developer of the application, you make the snap, you put it in the store, and if it doesn't work correctly on Fedora, and you've done all the right things, and you packaged it up correctly, and it's a valid snap, and it doesn't work on Fedora and does work on Ubuntu, or vice versa, then that's something we need to address. We deal with the problem of making sure SnapD and therefore snaps run on these different distros. And it's up to us working with those distros to make sure that that stuff continues to work. So, for example, we have people in the OpenSUSE community and people in the Fedora community and people in the Manjaro community who help keep these SnapD packages up to date in those various distributions. We're keen for everything to work the same everywhere. And as I said earlier, we have a whole bunch of VMs and we periodically try out. We don't formally test other people's applications, but like now and then we'll spin up some applications in VMs to make sure that it's working as we expect it to. And then, you know, we report to developers when things don't work correctly. So a good example of that is, when a Linux distribution has a different set of defaults, for example. So one Linux distribution might have Wayland by default and another one might have Xorg. And the person who made the snap, the developer, was running on a system that used Xorg and never tested it on Wayland. And so it might be that they didn't do the necessary bits in their Snapcraft YAML to enable their snap to work on both Xorg and Wayland. And so that's the responsibility of the developer to fix. But then there might be parts that we need to fix as well. So it's a collaborative process. We work together to make stuff work everywhere. And I think at the moment we've got something like 40, 41 or so Linux distributions listed. If you want to see how diverse the support for snaps is, if you go to the Snapcraft store, you go to snapcraft.io/core, C-O-R-E. And core is like the minimal runtime that gets installed the first time you install a snap. And this is like, there's not much in there. There's libc and a few other libraries and not much else. And this is like the thin runtime. And on the bottom of that webpage, snapcraft.io/core, there's a list of distributions with a logarithmic graph showing you where the core snap is installed.
Yeah, I see that.
And it's quite a big list.
Impressive.
There are some, obviously at the top, there are some familiar names like Ubuntu and Elementary and Mint. But the more you scroll down, there are Linux distributions we've never targeted. We've never specifically said we support this Linux distribution. But there are people on those Linux distributions who have installed Snap support and have installed Snaps. And so we know that Snaps work on all of those distros. Otherwise, Core wouldn't be installed on all those distros. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of... I think you could say we've covered like 90-something percent of the user base with 60-something percent of the Linux distributions that exist. There are still some elusive ones that we don't support yet or that we have not very good support for. One day maybe we'll hit every single Linux distribution, but I think we've covered a significant number of people.
Yeah, so that means I build an app, publish that as Snap, and I can reach a very, very huge number of person.
Yeah, millions.
Yeah,
well. There are millions of people right now who have Snaps installed. In fact, I'll give you a funny story. I was at conference last month, Scale, Southern California Linux Expo, and we had a Snapcraft stand. And myself and a couple of colleagues had a little table, and we had some T-shirts and some leaflets to give away, and we were answering questions from people. And it was surprising how many people would come up and say, what are snaps? I've heard of this. What is it? And we'd ask them questions like, you know, what Linux distribution are you using? And you get all kinds of answers, but often they'd say Ubuntu. And we'd say, okay, what software do you have installed? What do you use on a daily basis? And they'd say Spotify or Slack or whatever they use for their work or whatever they use for leisure. How did you get that? Oh, in the Ubuntu software store. Okay, well, you're using snaps then. Oh, am I? And so it's got to that point where so many people are using it without even knowing they're using it. And that's good, because that's kind of the point. It's just snaps are just a vehicle for developers to get their software in the hands of users. And from a user point of view, they just want to open a software store, search for the thing they want, or browse for the thing they want, install it, and then carry on with their day, right? They don't want to be going and getting, like normal users, you and I might, but most normal users don't want to go and get a tarball and then unpack it and then configure and make and apt install some library and then make again and then apt install some other library and some developer library and then make again and then make install and then never get an update to that application ever again. That's not a use case that most people want, right?
That's the good old times.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's nerdy and I enjoy doing that. I've been doing that today, but that's not like if we ever want to reach more people, more normals, then you've got to make it easy for people to get software and got to make it easy for developers to share their software. And that's the goal.
Yeah. And I think you reached that goal with Snaps. Just looking at this list of distribution that are accessible, that's absolutely awesome. So that's for the Linux world, but could Snap exist for other OSs like BSDs, for example?
Ooh. So there are some core technologies that Snaps use, which would either need to exist for this to happen, or Snapd would need to grow support for whatever the equivalent technologies are on those other platforms. So we make use of Systemd, for example, and we make use of AppArmor and Setcomp to do the security confinement in the Linux kernel. If there were like almost one-to-one mappings of those technologies in the BSD world, I don't know BSD, I've not used it for a very long time. If there were mappings in that world, then yeah, potentially that could happen. But there would need to be a significant advantage to doing that. Like, the developers of Snapd and the developers of Snapcraft have, as with any project, a huge list of things to do. They're not sitting staring out the window wondering, oh, I'm bored, what should I do today? I know, I'll port to BSD, right? That's not the way it goes. There's got to be some useful rationale for that. And there may well be one that I just don't know of. Like, there may be some embedded device somewhere which is like deployed in a million locations and is crying out for an operating system with automatically updated snaps, right? Maybe. And it runs BSD. Maybe. But someone would need to do that work, and those technologies would need to exist on the other side. And I think that's the main blocker, is the fact that we use a lot of Linux specific technologies that make that a hard problem to solve. I don't think it's an impossible problem to solve. And I've certainly sat in a bar with our developers where we've spitballed the idea of making snaps work on other platforms like Windows and macOS and BSD. And you know, we'll chat about it over a beer, but it's not on anyone's to-do list right now that I'm aware of.
Okay. Talking about IoT devices and things like that, what's the relation between Snaps and Ubuntu Core?
Oh, that's a good question. So Snaps are originally, when they first started, we envisaged them as being used on IoT devices and things like a gateway in a building, a gateway machine that has access to a bunch of sensors and can sense the environment in the building and sense like the elevators when they're working and when they're failing. And that edge gateway can then report upstream to some, you know, network operations center or whatever, that this building is on fire, or, you know, the doors are all open, or air conditioning is broken, or whatever it's going to report, right? And we envisage that those devices would be in a possibly remotely inaccessible location, not just in a building, but they could be in a remote telecom base station or something. They could be anywhere. And that the people who deploy those systems would want a way to keep them up to date. So long as they had an internet connection, they could keep up to date. But not just the applications keep up to date, but the OS keep up to date as well. Because over the years, we've heard plenty of stories of devices that are in people's homes, be they routers or routers for your American audience, or baby monitors, or, you know, webcams, all these devices that ship to consumers and then never get a software update, right? That's a problem. Or machines that have baked in default passwords. You know, these are problems that need solving. Like, and
yeah, I was going to say, like, admin, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And so one of the things, as part of this strategy, one of the things we created was Ubuntu Core. Now, Ubuntu Core is a very slimmed down version of Ubuntu designed for these kind of use cases. It's not really designed for your desktop or your home server. You could crowbar it into doing that, but that's not what it's designed for. The primary design goal for Ubuntu Core is to have this thin Ubuntu base on which you can install snaps, where the OS itself, Ubuntu Core, is snapped as well. So the kernel is a snap, and the driver layer is a snap, and the OS, which I've already mentioned called Core, is a snap, and then your application's on top. And so long as that thing has an internet access, it will get updates periodically, which you can control. You could defer updates and only do them on a weekend, or only do them on the third Tuesday, or, you know, defer them for a month or whatever. But it can have automatic updates. So we don't get in this situation where there are devices out in the field that never get updated and have default passwords. And those are two things that we don't allow in Ubuntu Core. It's always updated. It's like defaults to check the store four times a day. But you can change that. You know, if it's in a remote location connected via 3G, you can reduce the frequency with which it checks the store. But also, it doesn't ship with any default passwords. You have to set it up on first run. So that was the goal, is to have an operating system that works on these kind of devices. And that was the goal from day one with Ubuntu Core and Snaps. And Snaps have evolved to be able to package anything. You know, initially, we envisaged a home gateway or something. And there are now people in some parts of the world that have home gateways, which are running Ubuntu Core and have Snaps installed on top. And so their internet connection is through an Ubuntu Core router. But they've evolved beyond that. And now you can get Spotify as a snap and, you know, Slack as a snap and VLC. So it's grown to be able to service any kind of application delivered to any kind of device, where it initially started off being like IoT style devices.
Yeah, you said that you could crowbar Ubuntu Core on a machine. Didn't you have a laptop running Ubuntu Core at Upcamp last year?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I actually, just as a bit of fun, I have a ThinkPad X61S. It's a little bit old, but I love it. And it's running Ubuntu Core. And part of the reason for that is I have far too many ThinkPads. And part is just for a bit of fun, really. And some of my colleagues are creating interesting snaps that are not designed for desktop. We're not trying to replace the Debian-based classic desktop with an entirely snap-based classic, a snap-based desktop. That's not the goal. But there are certain things that you can do with this, like you can create a digital signage system or one of those smart mirrors or something like that, where it's a fixed single use device, you know, that does one thing. I'm just playing with those snaps on a machine because I like playing with stuff, really.
Okay. We've been at this for about almost an hour now. I still have a lot of questions about the Snap Store and everything. Cool. But I think maybe we can keep that for another interview. We have, you and I, we have sent a call out for questions on the internet and on our different Telegram groups. So I think we will go over those questions now. And well, I guess we're going to have to record another interview about the Snap Store another day.
That'll be awesome. Okay. Yeah, I look forward to it.
So let's go with the questions from the internet. And I've read the questions. You haven't? Or not all of them?
Surprise me. No, I haven't seen any of them.
Okay.
No.
So I understand most of them, but I hope some of them will make more sense for you than for me.
I hope so.
Okay. So first question from Ethergreen, at EthergreenIT on Twitter. Inspired by a recent tweet about Fingerbox using Snaps and Ubuntu Core, I'd be interesting to hear Poppy talk about the security implications of Snap packages. I love the convenience aspect and find Snap superior to PPAs, but I also find auto updates for IoT device a bit scary. And it goes on talking about the problem that Asus has a few weeks ago, where some malicious code was inserted in the update process. So what do you have to answer?
So there's a few things there. I mean, I talked before about the fact that you can defer updates. So you don't have to take updates straight away. You can. So for example, your organization may have machines in a lab that update more frequently and allow you to do QA to make sure that there are no problems with the packages that you're getting. And then machines that are out in the field can have their updates deferred to a week later or a month later. So you can mitigate those kind of things. Now, I'm not a security expert, so, you know, take anything I say about security with a pinch of salt, because that's not my area of expertise. But as we discussed previously, the whole problem of having machines out there that don't update, that never update, is a massive problem. And our strategy for solving that is we provide regular updates to those devices, and application developers provide regular updates to their applications to ensure that kind of problem doesn't occur. Now, there may be other problems that occur, and sure, you've got to do your risk analysis of what the impact of that might be. And one of the solutions might be to have a QA network and deferred updates out in the field. But that's one for each individual organization to figure out. But I think the strategy we've got is certainly way better than the existing model of ship a device to a customer and then leave it and never software update it and leave it with default passwords. Is just untenable. And, you know, even in some countries, they're starting to legislate against that as a result of the fact of all these compromises that have happened over the years. So it's certainly a problem that people are aware of.
Okay. From MGC Labs on Twitter. Can we use ZFS on Ubuntu Core?
Huh. I don't know. That's a good question.
You know what? You're going to get some information about that, and we will come back to that on the next episode, next interview.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I've never tried it. I mean, that would be interesting. I've never tried it. I don't see why not. I have a feeling it should be possible. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be possible. That would be fun.
Yeah. A while ago, there was someone said there's an app for that, and soon we're going to say there's a Snap for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree.
It also wants to hear about Snap security, so we talked about that already. Do Snaps include a log of the changes they've made to the system, not just being explicit about what it can do in interfaces, but what it has done, actually what files have been changed and so on?
So because snaps are not unpacked on your system, they're atomic. So if you snap install VLC and then snap remove VLC, it's gone. So the files that were changed were a few metadata files and the snap. And so when you remove it, the snap is gone. So there isn't a changelog as such, because it's just replacing a file with another file. Now, inside that, obviously, there's a whole bunch of files, and there could be a significant number of changes between one version of VLC and another version of VLC. I think we need to improve the way in which we expose the changelogs in the store, because at the moment, it's not a tremendously good experience for users to see what the changes were. So, yes, that's something we do need to change, and I will bring that up with the store team the next time I see them.
Would you say Ubuntu Core is there for servers or Kubernetes use?
It's more for single-use devices. Not really. Ubuntu Core is not really meant for servers. Like, it's more for, as I said previously, like an edge gateway or a router or a device that's in a remote location that humans almost never go to. You know, we get people telling us how they're using Ubuntu Core, and it's often on a very small, low power device that's at the end of a very slow 3G connection, if that, and nobody ever visits the thing. You know, it's unusual. So that's more likely.
When will we see a device with Ubuntu Core on the moon? Because talking about some place where no one goes.
Is there 3G on the moon?
I don't know. Still from MTC Labs, because he had like 7 questions.
Awesome.
Do you see Ubuntu Core getting to the point of being a Chrome OS replacement?
That's interesting. So on my ThinkPad that I've got Ubuntu Core installed, I've been playing with various graphical applications, because Ubuntu Core is not a traditional Linux distribution that has X installed. It's very lean, and there's no graphical environment at all. And the Mir developers have created some example snaps in the store where they've bundled Mir and some graphical application. For example, Chromium. And so the Chromium browser can run on Ubuntu Core. I think the use case is really to have like a web page open as a digital signage thing, maybe a big TV that you might see at the reception desk in an office building, a Raspberry Pi strapped to the back of the TV with Ubuntu Core on it. And it's just showing a web page that's got, you know, who's visiting today or what's on the menu in the restaurant, that kind of stuff. And someone else edits the web page and that just refreshes, and that would auto update. The Ubuntu Core would stay nice and secure, so you don't have to really worry about it. You just attach it to the back of the TV and forget all about it. Those kind of use cases, yes. Whether we could get it to the point where you have all of the window management and being able to do things like print and suspend properly, there's an awful lot of work there to do. I know that the guys in the Mir team are working with Martin Wimpress to get the Mate desktop available as a snap, and I know the KDE guys worked on a prototype of having the Plasma desktop available as a snap. And so I could see someone in the community could hack together an Ubuntu Core setup with one of these desktops, whether it's a single application with Mir or with Plasma or with Ubuntu Mate or some other popular desktop, put those things together and create something that behaves very like Chrome OS for sure. It's not something we're like actively working on right now. It's not on our roadmap, but the tools are all out there. Someone could build that kind of thing themselves for sure.
Yeah, it seems like it would. You could use an Ubuntu Core to do something like a Chromecast more than a Chrome OS. Mm.
Yeah, sure.
Like right. Next question was, any progress on getting Snaps working on Red Hat? I want to build Snaps, but our company uses CentOS.
Yes, there are. We have support for installing Snaps on RHEL and CentOS.
Cool. So that's done. And last question from GC Labs. Is any sort of self-healing in the cards for the future? I know snaps can be rolled back, but can an entire snap-based system say this kernel snap worked, roll back until a new one is whitelisted?
Well, that's effectively what it does, because you as a developer of a snap, you can add health checks and hooks that run when the snap is installed. And you could do checks, sanity checks on the system and say, okay, everything is good, we'll proceed, or everything is bad, let's stop. And then the snap doesn't get updated and rolls back to the last known good. That's exactly what it does right now. And that works for kernel snaps and application snaps. So we kind of have that already. And that was something we promised from the beginning, was the ability to, so there's two things there. There's one is automatic rollback when something goes wrong. So for some reason, the application can't install. Maybe the snap is malformed and maybe the system ran out of disk space. Who knows? You know, some adverse situation occurred and the snap didn't update. So it rolls back to the last known good, the previous version, which is one of the reasons why we keep multiple copies of the snap on disk. So when you run your df command and you see lots of squashfs files, sometimes you see what look like duplicates. And that's because we keep the current version of the snap that you're running plus the two previous ones. You can change it so it only keeps current and the previous one. And you can also remove all the unused ones if you want to. Those are both possible. But that's the reason why we do that, is so that you can, the developer can detect an adverse situation and roll the snap back. But equally, the user might update a snap and then find the latest build is broken. And so they can just type snap revert and then the name of the snap, and it will roll it back. So you've got control from both sides. Either the developer or the user can do rollbacks.
Very, very interesting. I didn't know that you could, as a developer, put some failsafe in the
right.
Email. Okay.
And this is kind of, these are like all the little additional things we've added that you just don't get in traditional package managers. And you know, some Linux distributions have tried to add things like, you know, SUSE has this concept where it uses ButterFS to take snapshots of the system so that when you're doing updates, if it fails, it can roll back. Well, we've baked it into the packaging system. Rather than adding a layer on top to do all of that, it's baked into each individual package to be able to do that. And I think that's one of the things that people may not appreciate when taking a first cursory look at snaps is, oh, it's just another packaging system. But there's a whole load of other ancillary stuff around that that maybe we don't talk about too much, or maybe is only like an expert feature in inverted commas. But it's all super useful stuff that builds upon and improves upon the packaging systems we had in the past.
Yeah, I think that brings peace of mind when you have to update software. Well, actually, you don't have to update snaps because they update themselves. But I mean, it's a little scary when I do an apt update of one particular software and I see a list of 35 devs that needs to be updated for just this one. And yeah, often I say, well, no, not this time. While with a snap, it's just install the new snap. And if it's not working, then roll back and everything's back to normal. Right. All right. Next question from Simon Butcher. Is there a process that will allow stuff that I have built in a Docker container to be built as a snap, or is it too simplistic view?
So I think what Simon's asking there is about, you know, is it possible to migrate from an existing packaging system or a Docker container into snaps? We don't really have tools to do that, to migrate from one to the other. When you build a snap, it can certainly ingest Debs as parts, and it can ingest lots of other things like zip files, and it can build components. So you could build up a snap that contained the same things that you were running in your Docker container. But they're architecturally very different animals. So you can think of it like a Docker container as an entire machine in which all your applications and processes run. Whereas a snap is just a process running on your machine. It runs on the bare metal. It's not in a VM. It's not in a container. It's confined, but it's not in a container or a VM. So it doesn't have like a separate NATed IP address or anything like that. It doesn't have like a second Ethernet adapter or anything that you might see if you look inside a QEMU or KVM VM or anything like that. So they're slightly different, and your application might work slightly differently when it's a snap than when it's Docker, when it's inside Docker. Also, when it's inside Docker, it basically has full access to the system inside that container, whereas the snap would should expect to be confined. And so if you were migrating something from being in Docker to being in a snap, you'd have to take account of the fact that it would be confined. And so that's actually one of the bigger tasks. Like, actually building your software in a snap is generally not the hard thing. The hard thing is more often the fact that applications expect to be able to write to all over the file system and expect to be able to just drop files in etc and write to varlib and stuff like that. So that's usually where the problems occur, not in any other part.
Two different beasts, so nothing straightforward from one to the other. Okay, Michael Vash, Michael Vash 7886 on Telegram asks, is it true Ubuntu is switching entirely to snaps? And there's a smiley at the end of that because it was meant as a joke. But is it something that's ever going to happen? Or is it not possible to have the entire Ubuntu distro as a snap?
So way back at the start of our conversation, I talked about some things don't really make sense to be snaps. So like libjpeg and libpng and things like that, that doesn't make sense really to be a snap. It makes sense to be delivered as a deb on the system, as a library that's used by other applications. So, you know, it's not something we're planning for. It's not something we're trying to do. We're not trying to replace every deb with snaps. It's not something that's on our roadmap. And equally, it's funny, whenever this comes up, we get asked about this all the time, to the point where internally we have conversations, well, how would we even do that if we wanted to? And we start thinking about how hard it would be to do, even if that was on the roadmap. Like, you know, I think it's difficult sometimes for people outside the bubble to comprehend the impact of the suggestions that they're making. And so when people are saying they're going to switch completely from debs to snaps, if you took a step back and understood how debs work and how snaps work, you'd realize how insane that sounds, because it's such a lot of work and such a lot of pointless work, because this stuff is all those libraries are already packaged as debs. Why would we want to like go through and boil the ocean and rebuild everything as a snap? It actually doesn't make any sense.
The second question from Michael is also obsolete, because he wanted to know if there were any insight on what's happening on the startup times of snaps. Then we already talked about that. That's good. Yep. That's been fixed, partially fixed, and work is in progress. Prophetic at Prophetic777 on Telegram says, what about snaps on mobile? Flatpaks look like they will find their way there.
So on mobile, I guess what they're talking about there is the various open source projects to build open source mobile platforms like Plasma and PureOS, I imagine. I haven't really looked into them. When the Ubuntu Touch project finished in 2017, I was moved off that project because I worked on it very closely. So I have quite a fondness for Ubuntu Touch. And that was handed over to the UbiPorts team, who have done brilliant work with Ubuntu Touch on various devices and keeping it up to date and migrating it from one release to another. I don't really keep a close eye on KDE Plasma and PureOS and other open source Linux phones, mostly because I've been a little bit burned by this, having worked on it for like 4 or 5 years myself, full time, and I know how hard it is. I'm deeply skeptical that any of these projects will see anything other than something as a tinkerer's toy. Like, we got it to the point where we had actual phones shipping. You could buy physical phones. Okay, you couldn't walk into Walmart in the US and buy one. You know, you had to order it from some strange Chinese website or a Spanish website. Fair enough. But we did get devices shipping, and I'm skeptical whether many devices will ship. And so if they choose to use Flatpak on those devices, fair enough. That's, you know, it's it's an interesting technical choice for a platform that I think won't necessarily get huge adoption.
All right. Next question comes from Eddie Fiji, at Eddie Fiji on Twitter. I understand an upgrade can be rolled back if technical issues are discovered in the new build. Can you dive into the canary concept where issues may be algorithmically detected? Is this like a failed live unit test in build?
So there's a few things there, right? There is the capability for the developer to do checks and rollback. In addition, something we have in the Snap Store that traditional packaging doesn't have is we have a concept of channels. The Snap Store has four default channels, which are stable, candidate, beta, and edge. And the idea behind this is a developer can push constantly updated builds to the edge channel, and users who are excited about that application and want to test out the very latest bleeding edge builds, you know, your typical Arch user might want to subscribe to the edge channel for that application. Whereas more conservative users, someone who typically uses an LTS Ubuntu distribution or a Debian distribution, might choose the stable channel because they want the stable releases only that have been QA'd. And so we provide the facility there for developers to push multiple different versions of their application to the store to service different types of users, the conservative users who want the stable version and the more excitable users who like edge builds. So that's another option. In fact, if you look at a good example of this is VLC. If you go to snapcraft.io/VLC, in the top right-hand corner, there's an install button. If you click that, a pop-down box appears, and it lists the channels. And VLC, the upstream VLC developers use this feature so that they can have the current stable release of VLC in the stable channel. And in the edge channel, they've got the builds of 4.0. Yeah. And in between, there are other versions that they're currently in beta or currently in candidate ready to go to the stable channel. And so that's another feature that allows developers to get their early builds out to users. Skype do the same thing. So Skype, if you go to snapcraft.io/Skype and click the button, this is slightly different in that they have a stable channel, but they also have something called a track. Is it a track? I think it is. An insider's track. And so this is a build of Skype that they test internally before they push it to the stable channel. And so when someone reports a bug with Skype and says, hey, on Linux, Skype does this thing and is broken, the Skype developers can say, oh, we think we fixed that. Refresh to the insider's track. And so all they have to do is snap refresh Skype --channel equals insiders. Insiders/stable, I think. And they will get that newer build of Skype that they can test out and report back to Microsoft and say, yes, I've tested that. It now works. And they can either stay on that release or go back to the stable release and wait for that insider's build to become the stable release in however many days, weeks, or months that it takes to do that. So we have these capabilities there in the store that enable developers to more richly deliver different versions of their applications for different types of users. And going back to the original question, the store does actually do canary in that it drips out updates to a small percentage, which then grows and grows and grows. And in fact, that's something that we had all the way back on Ubuntu Phone. Ubuntu Phone did updates as a canary. So it would send out like to 1% of the user base and then 10% of the user base and then like 20%. And it would grow and grow and grow. And if we saw that there was a massive problem, we'd halt it so that it didn't go out to 100% of the users. And we've inherited that in the Snap Store.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. Oh, I'm learning things. That's nice. Another question from Eddie. Snaps, I believe, can contain different components of a complex solution. They can interact with one another on a single device or across an enterprise. Is that correct? Can you provide some sample use case for this?
If you think about a snap just being a software package, it's just a package of software. That's really all it is. And it can contain anything that any other software package can contain, really. So if you think of VLC, for example, the VLC snap contains obviously VLC itself, the popular video player, but also contains a bunch of libraries that are required by VLC in order to render the various types of video and audio and codecs and all that kind of stuff that make VLC work, and wrapper scripts that set up the environment and make sure that hardware accelerated video decoding works and all that kind of stuff. So at a simple level, like even a moderately complex desktop application like VLC contains a whole bunch of components. If you think of on the server side, that's similar to something like Nextcloud, where the Nextcloud snap is similar in that it contains multiple components, but they're all interlocking, very closely related components. So the Nextcloud snap will contain a web server, a database, the PHP runtime stuff, and then Nextcloud itself and any other support libraries that Nextcloud needs. So yes, a snap can contain a whole bunch of components all bundled together to make it easy for users to install and deploy software. So like the easiest way to install Nextcloud is snap install Nextcloud. Like without a doubt, there's like a million different guides of here's how to install Nextcloud, but being able to do it with one line is for many people quite compelling, right? And there are other applications in the store that are similar, like equally complicated applications. It's no different than any other packaging system in that, yes, you could deploy them on multiple hosts in your organization and they may talk to each other no differently than any other software package. In the same way that if you spun up 10 machines all with Apache on and they're all, or Nginx, and they're all proxying a machine behind them, it's no different than like snap installing multiple things on a host and doing the same thing.
Next, from Frank SMCB on Telegram, has there been any discussion about doing something like snap halt package to block upgrading of a specific snap package? I guess that's also what we talked earlier about delaying an update. But can you stop a snap altogether from updating?
You kind of can. So one way that as a byproduct will stop a snap updating is if you manually install the snap without getting it from the store. So when you do the command snap install VLC, the snap command will talk to the snap daemon and the snap daemon will talk to the store and it will go and get VLC. And along with the snap will come a thing called an assert file. And that assertion contains some metadata like the fact that the VLC snap needs to be connected to certain interfaces and whatever those default interfaces are for the VLC snap. Now, you could, and if you do that, and if you install that snap, the default snap daemon will auto-refresh VLC. However, I'm not recommending you do this, but if you were to snap download VLC, instead of snap install, you do snap download VLC, it would download the .snap file and it would download the .assert file, the assertion file. And you could snap install that snap file name, /VLC_AMD64.snap, and then you add --dangerous on the end. And if you do that, what you're saying is, someone gave me this snap file. They could have given it to you on a USB stick, or you happen to get it from the snap store, but you could have got it from anywhere. I want to jam this snap onto my system. And because you're doing it with this --dangerous flag, that means that the assertion isn't loaded, and therefore SnapD won't bother checking the store, because as far as SnapD is concerned, it didn't come from the store. You, in inverted commas, sideloaded the application on your system. And the byproduct of that is it will never get updated. So it's a bit of a long-winded answer and quite a workaround. And I don't recommend you do it, but yeah, it's possible.
So that's the way to install snaps from snapcraft.ru.
Yes. dodgy snaps are us. .com. Yes.
Right. The last question, the very, very hard question from Ken Fallon from Hacker Public Radio. By the way, that's because of Ken that we're doing this interview. He challenged me to do an episode about snaps, and I figured, yeah, instead of talking about something I know a little bit of, let's talk to someone who knows a lot more than me about that. So Ken asks, and you answer only if you want to answer, why not just use flat packs?
That's a great question. So we're always in the our policy is we've made some technology that we think developers will like and that we think users will like. If users choose to use something else or developers choose to use something else, so be it. If a developer wants to make a snap and they also want to make a Flatpak, that's fine as well. We don't mind. It's not like we have some exclusivity agreement with anyone to say you will only make snaps. If you make snaps and you make Flatpaks, that's great. No problem at all. What I would say is, for some applications, you may well get better support by having the snap. Now, it depends on the application. But one thing that we really try and do with snaps is try and get the upstream developer to own the snap, as in they publish it to the store. And that's sometimes difficult because, developers are often not time rich. They don't have money, time to fritter away on new and interesting packaging formats. So we try and help them to package the software, but we want them to own it. We want them to publish it in the store. So my canonical example that I use all the time is VLC. I worked with one of the VLC developers in order to make the VLC snap work well, and I then handed it over to them. And it's now building inside the VideoLAN project's CI system and publishing to the Snap Store directly from their infrastructure. And so if you have a problem with that snap, if it's a problem with SnapD or Snapcraft, then sure, come to us. But if it's a problem with VLC, the snap, then you should be confident that you can go to the VLC developers themselves. And the VLC developers themselves are empowered to be able to fix those problems themselves and deliver updates directly to the Snap Store. One of the things I've noticed with many Flatpaks is, and I don't have a bad word to say about Flatpaks, I'm just pointing out that a lot of Flatpaks are made by enthusiastic members of the community. And so the upstream developer may not even know that that Flatpak exists. And so the first time they hear about it might be when someone files an issue on their issue tracker saying, hey, I've installed your Flatpak of FUBAR Baz and it doesn't work. And that's, for some developers, an unwelcome surprise. They don't necessarily want to be bothered by support tickets for a package that they didn't make. And I think that's one fundamental difference, is that we try, where possible, to talk to upstream developers and have them own the application so that users can be confident that the application came from the right people. So you've got that confidence, but also the developers that are confident that they're empowered to manage their application delivery to users. So also, there's no Flatpak of Nextcloud. So,
yeah, good point. All right. On those words, I think we've been recording for an hour and a half. And
awesome.
Yeah, we're going to stop there. And as I said earlier, we're going to have to do that again because I still have more questions about the Snap Store and the tools used to build snaps. Where can people find more information about you and about snaps and Snapcrafts and Snap Store and everything?
And snap. I'm Popey pretty much everywhere. You can find me on IRC. I'm Popey. I'm on Twitter as @Popey. I'm on Mastodon, Popey @ubuntu.social. And for the day job stuff, you'll find everything you need to know about Snapcraft at snapcraft.io. There are everything, all the links I've mentioned, they're all linked off the top of that website. There's a link to the store where you can browse snaps. There's a link to documentation where you can find out how to build them. There's a link to the forum where you can discuss with other people. We also have a YouTube channel, which is Snapcraft.io. If you just search for Snapcraft.io on YouTube, you'll find it. I've done a few videos detailing how to get started. If you look through those, dating from the beginning of February this year, if you're interested in learning more about how to build snaps, then that's a good way to learn because, well, if you like learning from watching some guy do it on a video screen rather than reading documentation, that's an alternative way to learn anyway.
Yep. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Alan, for joining me today on this episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Thank you, Yannick. I really appreciated it. And sorry to take up so much of your time.
No. That's awesome. That's awesome. No problem. I could talk about that for hours. I will see you at OCCOMP next October.
Yeah, in October. Yeah. Look forward to it.
Right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Hacker Public Radio. I will be back soon with another interview. With Alan, and I already have something else in my planning. So I will definitely be back with more interviews. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao. This episode of HPR is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial by attribution license. The sound used in the opening and closing sequence is Speaker X Clash by Daniel H., released under a Creative Commons non-commercial by attribution license and available on Jamendo.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.